This week's parasha is Parshas Toldos, and we begin on page 124. Okay, Ve'ela Toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham. These are the generations, the offspring of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Avraham ha'ilad es Yitzchak. Abraham begat Yitzchak. Vayhi Yitzchak ben Arba'im Shana. Yitzchak was 40 years old. Bekach toyes Rivka bas Psuel ha'aramim Padan Aram. When he took Rivka, the daughter of Psuel of Aram, from Padan Aram. Achais Lavan Aramiloi le'isha, the sister of Laban, for a wife. Okay, now this is the pasuk we're going to focus on. Vayata Yitzchak la'Hashem le'leichach ishtai. And Yitzchak prayed to Hashem opposite his wife, Kiakarahi, for she was barren. The Rashi points out that when it says that Yitzchak davened opposite his wife, it means that Yitzchak was on one side of the room, she was on the other side of the room, and they're both praying. Vayasar lei Hashem, and Hashem listened to him, Vata Rivka Ishtai, Rivka, his wife, became pregnant. So Rashi points out that the pasuk says Hashem listened to him. That means the prayers that helped that Rivka should become pregnant were his prayers. Hashem accepted his prayers, not hers. And Rashi says, because Ein Adoyim Tfilat Tzadik Ben Tzadik LeTfilat Tzadik Ben Rasha. You cannot compare the prayer of a righteous person, the son of a righteous person, to the prayer of a righteous person, son of a wicked person. Rashi's implying that because Yitzchak was a Tzadik and his father was a Tzadik, that was more of a reason for his prayers to be accepted more than Rivka, whose father was a Rasha. So the question is that we can make an argument and say the other way around, that the Tzadik ben Tzadik has a lot easier than the Tzadik ben Rasha in getting to where they get. So why would we say that the Tzadik ben Tzadik's prayers were more accepted than the Tzadik ben Rasha? So the Michtam Eliyahu brings an answer from Rav Simcha Zisel Ziv. He was known as the Alter von Kelim. The way he explains it is like this. Yes, we always assume that the Tzadik ben Rasha, who we refer to as the Baal Teshuvah, right, has had a harder time getting to where they got to than the person that we refer to as an FFB from birth. And that's true. To get to the point of being observant, the person who was brought up observant clearly has an easier path getting to that point than the person who is a Tzadik ben Rasha, than the person who didn't come from that kind of background. But the Tzadik ben Tzadik, the person who was raised in a righteous home, a person who was raised in an observant home, actually faces a very unique challenge. A unique challenge that the Baal Teshuvah doesn't have. And Rav Simcha Zisel Ziv explained this based on the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma says, Atikta kashe mechadata. That means old is harder than new. When you learn something new, then it's exciting, you get into it. When you learn something old, you don't learn it as well. Repetition. It's harder, repetition, to repeat, to review is harder than to learn anew. And the way the Alter von Kelim, Rav Simcha Zisel Ziv, explains this is because when you approach something that a new subject, you know you don't know it. And because you know you don't know it, you know you have to put in the effort to understand it. And basically, you're in that mode of trying to understand something you don't understand. And therefore, in that situation, you try to understand and you delve into it to really get the understanding. But then once you've learned it already, your attitude is, whether it's clearly your attitude or in the back of your mind, whatever it may be, the attitude is, I know this already. I don't have to put in so much effort. I know it already. And because of that, you actually don't put in enough effort to be able to delve even deeper than where you've gotten to until now. Because in your mind, I know it already. It's almost like there's, what more should I do? Therefore, says the Alter von Kelim, the person who is, so for instance, Avraham Avinu. Avraham didn't have a background. Avraham didn't have a righteous upbringing. But he recognized that everything was false. And he realized he had to learn what was right. He had to learn the truth. Yitzchak, on the other hand, for Yitzchak, it's like, I learned this already. I know this already. I got it from my father. My father taught it to me. I know it. Meaning his whole approach to Yiddishkeit, his whole approach to serving Hashem could have been like the old Gemara, like the old subject. I know this already. And therefore he just does it because his father taught it to him, but he doesn't do it based on his own understanding. He doesn't make it his own. Yitzchak, though, if we're calling Yitzchak a tzaddik ben tzaddik, a righteous person instead of a righteous person, he wouldn't be called that if all he was doing was serving Hashem just based on what his father told him. Not that he'd be wrong for doing it that way, but to be called tzaddik ben tzaddik, to be called a tzaddik like his father, he needed actually to approach his service of Hashem as if he never knew it before. He had to approach the service of Hashem like his father did. So although he knew it, he had to kind of forget about what he knew and approach it as if he didn't know it. And to come to understand the service of Hashem on his own, as if he didn't have that background. He had to go ahead and make what he knew already into something new. He had to be able to say, I do this because I understand to do it. I understand this is the right thing to do. Just like his father had to basically prove it, had to work on it and prove it to himself that this was the emes, this was the truth. Yitzchak had to make sure that he didn't just follow the truth because that's what he learned, but rather he was to take it to a higher level and make it his own. Approach the service of Hashem like his father did, as if he never knew it. Only then could he be called tzaddik ben tzaddik. That's harder. That's not easier. That's harder to do. The person who's approaching something new has an easier time putting everything into it that he's supposed to, more than the person who's already used to it, who knows it, who's aware of it, who knows it. And it's hard for him to be able to approach it as if he never knew anything before. Yitzchak did that. Yaakov did that. If each one is considered a righteous person on his own merit, it means that he approached the service of Hashem as if it was brand new, as if he didn't have that background. Or in the very least, he used that background to help him in some way or in some way to go ahead and use that as a point where he could now do something, so to gain new insight. But the point was that Yitzchak had to be able to approach his service of Hashem, not just because this is what his father taught him, as true as it was, but because he understood it was true. He understood that you have to serve Hashem. He understood serving of Hashem and the truth of serving Hashem in the same manner that Avraham did. I mean, he did it that way because he understood that when you don't just do it because you learned that way in your parents' house, but you do it because you understand that's the truth, that it means more to you, that it lasts more, you retain it better, it means more to you. Therefore, why was Yitzchak's prayers listened to more than Rivka? Seems that Rivka had a harder time getting to where she got to than Yitzchak did. The answer is no. For Yitzchak to get where he had to get to be a tzaddik ben tzaddik, a true tzaddik ben tzaddik, he had to actually had a harder job. He had to basically try to forget, ignore what he already knew and approach it as if he didn't know it, so that he on his own should recognize the truth of serving Hashem just like his father did. And therefore, it was a harder job for Yitzchak to do. To get to where he got to as a tzaddik ben tzaddik. And therefore he had the greater merit. Now, when we talk about this concept about the person who has that already knows it from his upbringing, that it's like the subject you already know. So in Yitzchak's case, you know, in the analogy that the Altaf and Kelim gives is basically like studying a piece of Gemara. Am I studying the piece of Gemara because I know it already? Or am I studying it as, or am I approaching it brand new? So too, is Yitzchak approaching it as if it's brand new in the sense of understanding, coming to the truth like his father did on his own? Or is he just, you know, going along with what he learned from his father? So that's a very interesting analogy in the sense of how you study something or come to understand something or realize something, that there's a difference between, you know, whether you know it or not, right? Are you putting in all that you can to understand it and to delve into it and get to the depth and the truth? Are you doing it because you're approaching as if it's new, or do you approach it as if you know it already? which is going to mean that your approach and your understanding could be lacking because you're not putting in the full effort. In a similar manner, the person who has the upbringing has the challenge of serving in the manner that he serves Hashem. He also has that problem. In the sense of the person who their observance to Hashem is new, because it's new, it's more exciting, it's not rote. The person, though, who's always been that way, you know, and this is the way they've always done it, and this is the way they're used to it, they can come to the point that their service of Hashem is rote. The manner is rote. It doesn't have the right feeling to it. It doesn't have the excitement. It doesn't have the feeling that you have to put into it. You know, when someone is new to davening, davening can be exciting. It's a brand new thing. Someone who's been doing it years and years and years, the same thing over and over again, it becomes somewhat stale. And although you're davening and you're trying to daven, it's harder for you to be able to get yourself into it and put in the right feeling and meaning into it. So the person who's always been doing it, you know, also faces the challenge of whether he's doing his service to Hashem out of rote, or is he doing it because, again, is he doing it with feeling and excitement because it's something that is exciting, something that is fresh. So I saw a very interesting thought on last week's parsha that relates to this idea. That in essence, in some ways, Yitzchak's challenge as being the first FFB, being the first from birth person, was again that he could have just been doing things because this is what he learned in his father's house. And when you do that, there's a danger of just doing that by rote. And Yitzchak's greatness was that he didn't just do it by rote because he approached it with a completely new perspective as his father did. For us, that when we have to go ahead and face the kind of challenge that when we're used to doing something so many times, we do it by rote, we also face the problem of how do we make it new? How do we make it ours? How do we refresh ourselves that we should be able to approach it with the same excitement and the same effort as someone who's new to it and has that freshness to them? So this thought relates to the following. There's a Gemara, the famous Gemara in Brachas, that says that tefilas avos tignum, our forefathers instituted davening. And the Gemara shows each pasuk. It shows a pasuk that shows how Avraham davened. In last week's parasha, we have a pasuk that says Yitzchak davened. Avraham davened in the morning. That means Avraham instituted shachris. Yitzchak davened in the evening. He instituted mincha. Yaakov davened in the evening. He instituted ma'ariv. Now, instituting the prayers doesn't mean instituted the form of prayer that we do, because we know that was instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the men of the Great Assembly, many years later. But it means that the idea of davening three times a day was something that was already instituted back by our avos, by our forefathers. So, the question that the commentaries ask on this Gemara, like, for instance, about the Gemara that says that Yitzchak instituted mincha, davening in the afternoon, referred to as mincha. So, which the Gemara calls that. So they ask, and Avram didn't daven mincha? You know that, is it possible Avram didn't daven mincha? You know, they say a joke. How do you know that Avram Avinu wore shtreimel? How do you know? Is it possible Avram Avinu didn't wear shtreimel? So is it possible Avram Avinu didn't daven mincha? But that has more basis. Because first of all, there's a Gemara that brings out a Gemara that says Avram did daven in the daven mincha time, and they also ask that we know the Gemara says that Avram Avinu kept all the mitzvahs, all 613 mitzvahs, including rabbinic laws. He kept them all.
So what did Yitzchak do?
Yitzchak, wait a minute, that's the question. So if Avraham did everything, right, he did all, even rabbinic law, then he should have been davening mincha. So the one answer that's given is that, yes, Avraham davened mincha. But the difference between shachris and mincha by Avraham was that shachris, he instituted for everyone to daven. His whole household was told, everybody has to make sure every morning they pray. Mincha was something he personally did. It was Yitzchak, his practice of mincha was the practice that, based on that, it now became the practice of Avraham's whole household to daven mincha. Now, the Marsha, when he brings down this answer, the Marsha adds to it that perhaps each one was more zariz. Each one was more, how do I say it? Each one was more, afterwards enthusiastic, but each one was more into each one of the prayers that they instituted because it corresponded to their personal trait. Each one of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, we know each one had their own unique trait that they excelled in, that they put into the Jewish people. So the Maharsha says that perhaps each one was more into the prayer that we see they davened and instituted because it corresponded to each one's personal midah. So I saw an interesting explanation. If we're talking about Mincha with Yitzchak, so I saw an interesting explanation. What midah, what characteristic of Yitzchak are we talking about that we would say because of that, Mincha was what he was most into and what he therefore brought into becoming part of what we do? And the answer starts with this saying from the Mechtam Eliyahu, that Yitzchak had to basically find a way of making his service of Hashem, instead of it being rote, instead of it just being done because this is what my father told me, he had to make it his own. He had to approach it as something new. That was Yitzchak's trait. Basically, to take something that would be old and rote or not as exciting or not as something that you put everything that you should put into, Yitzchak was the one who did the opposite. He took the old stuff, so to speak, and instead of just taking it as it is, he made it new. He approached it as if it was something brand new and made it his own. Mincha, if you think about it, Mincha is always spoken about as the hardest prayer to daven. Why? Well, that's something else. But it's the hardest prayer to have kavanah, to have good concentration, good feeling with. Why? Well, number one, if you think about it, Shacharis and Ma'ariv both have their own unique prayers to them. Right? Shacharis has Pesukah de Zimra, and it has its special brachas before Shema. Ma'ariv has its special brachas before Shema. Those prayers have some prayers that are unique to them. And therefore, since they have their own unique prayers, that has a certain way of helping you get into that prayer. While Mincha, right, if you think about it, Mincha is Ashrei, Shemayna Esrei, Tachanun Oleinu. You just did that in the morning. There's nothing new about the prayers themselves. You're basically doing over what you did before. That's number one. Number two, in the morning, it's a new day, there's a certain freshness to it. Mincha, you've got all the headaches, you know, all the headaches that you had a whole day, right, are now, have already accumulated up on your head, and you have to daven Mincha, and maybe they're going to continue after Mincha, depending on what time you daven during the day. So besides that, you're lacking a certain freshness of the day, you've got all the things of the day that disturb you, that are taking away from your Mincha. So, Mincha, so to speak, has no outside help. If you want your mincha to be something, you gotta find it from within. You gotta take what you have. It's not new, but you gotta take what you have, and somewhere you gotta make it fresh, you gotta make it new. You've gotta take from yourself and invest from yourself in it. To make it into what it's meant to be. That was Yitzchak. Yitzchak had to take what he knew, and he had to make it fresh, he had to make it new. In Yitzchak's case, perhaps he was doing that because he did that in the manner of like Avraham Avinu, starting, ignoring everything that he knows and starting from new. You know, when it comes to davening, that's not what you do. But again, it's the trait of taking something that's not new, there's no newness there to help you along, but to basically find it from within yourself to make something new and fresh. That's what you need for Mincha. Because you don't have any other things that are helping you. You don't have the unique prayers. You don't have the freshness of the day. And on the contrary, you've got all the things disturbing you. You have to find it. There's not a lot of help. You have to find it from within. You have to find it from within to make it new, to make it yours. And that's what Yitzchak had to do. He had to basically, you know, whatever he knew from before, he had to kind of put it away and now he had to find within himself to put it away and to approach it as brand new. And therefore, it was Yitzchak's midah, that was the midah of Yitzchak, that therefore said, that made him, so to speak, that made mincha his tefillah, made it his special prayer, the prayer that was most special to him, and the prayer that he instituted for Klal Yisrael. Okay, let's now turn to page 126. Okay. Page 126, Pasuk Chavtes. Okay, actually we'll go up, let's go up to Pasuk Chavzayin if you psukim. Ve'yigdalu en ha'arim. This is after Yaakov and Esav were born. And the young boys grew up. Vayi Esav ish le'yatzad ish le'yatzayin ish sada. And Esav became a person who knew hunting, a man of the field. Yaakov ish tab. Yaakov was a person who was uncomplicated. Yoishav ha'olim, sitting in tents. Vayav Yitzchak as Esav kisayin befiv. Yitzchak loved Esav because Esav always provided him with game to eat. Rivka Eva says Yaakov, and Rivka loved Yaakov. Vayazah Yaakov nazid. Yaakov was cooking a dish. Esav min asada v'hu ayev. Esav came from the field and he was exhausted. Vayimah Esav al Yaakov, and Esav said to Yaakov, Halitaini nam and adam adam azeh. Basically, he said to him, pour into me from this red stuff. I'm exhausted. Adam, therefore he called his name Edom. Vayimah Yaakov says, Mikra chayemes v'chayves chali. Sell me like today your firstborn rights. Vayimah Esav says, Hinei anecha heilech lamas. Behold, I'm going to die. Lamas zeli b'chayra. What do I need the firstborn rights? Vayimah Yaakov said, Hishavali kayayim. Swear to me like today, by Yeshua Lady swore to him, by Mekaris Bechairas and Yaakov, and he sold his firstborn right to Yaakov. The Yaakov Nasan Le Esav Lechem and Azir Adashim, Yaakov gave to Esav bread and a lentil dish, by Yecha Vayesh, he ate, he drank, by Yaakov Yelach, he got up and he left, by Yves Esav Esabachaira, and Esav disgraced the firstborn right. Okay, famous story. I want to share with you the Ramban's comments on a number of things regarding this part of the parasha. So the Ramban's, the first thing I want to mention from the Ramban is, okay, so what did Yaakov, when Yaakov told Esav, sell it to me, and he purchased the firstborn right from Esav, what did he pay for it? What did he use to purchase it? What did he give him as payment for his firstborn right?
The food,
you say. So there are those who don't say that. There's those who say that if Yaakov said, sell it, you're gonna pay face value. You're gonna pay a bowl of tomato soup, to sell the firstborn right? I mean, the firstborn right, there could be a lot to that. You know, especially if they were following the custom of the Torah, the firstborn gets a double portion. And there's only two sons. That means two sons were going to divide up the entire estate of Yitzchak. There's a lot there, seemingly. Right? So he goes ahead and he sells it for that little bit of stuff.
He actually doesn't say that. It doesn't imply that he sold it.
Again, it says that, you know, give me to eat. Yaakov says, sell me, and he sells it, and then he gives him to eat.
Right,
does giving him to, maybe giving him to eat just means after he agreed to the sale,
right,
he gave him to eat.
Right.
Meaning basically his leverage was the food, and he used the leverage,
right,
and Esav agreed, right? But what was the sale about? Well, they made up a price and Yaakov had to pay. That's how some learn. Some learn that it wasn't sold for a bowl of soup. It was sold for whatever price they made up. And then he gave him a bowl of soup. But the Ramban doesn't learn that way. The Ramban learns, no, he sold it for a bowl of soup. The bowl of soup was what he paid. That's how he bought. That's what he paid for it. He paid for it a bowl of soup. Now, the next thing that the Ramban points out or discusses is So Esav says, so Yaakov says, tell me the firstborn right. Esav says, I'm going to die. What do I need the firstborn right for? Yaakov says, swear to me. And Esav swears. What are we swearing about? What's the point of the swearing? What's the point of the oath? Why is he getting Esav to swear? I mean, Esav says, Yaakov says, sell it to me. Esav says, yeah, what do I need the firstborn right for? So buy it. Do the purchase and finish. What's the swearing about?
He doesn't trust him.
We need to trust him what?
Well, by saying you swear, maybe it'll be more meaningful.
Right? Okay. So the first explanation of the Ramban is that basically Esav says to him, when Yaakov says something the firstborn right, Esav says, yeah, well, it doesn't mean anything to me. I have a good chance I'm going to die. I'm not going to make it to after my father dies, and that's when the firstborn right really means something. So, what's it worth to me? So Esav basically says, yeah, I'll be glad to sell it. It doesn't mean much to me. Swear to me that. Swear to me that it doesn't mean much to you. Because he wanted Esav to make it very, very clear, right, that this firstborn right was as meaningless to him as he said. So they should have come back and say, I didn't really mean that. I didn't mean that. No, he made him swear to it because he should be able to come back and say, I didn't really mean it. That's one explanation. The other explanation is that Yaakov made him swear that he's not going to ever come back and complain about this sale. We're going to make a deal. And now you're going to swear to me that you're not going to try to renege on it or make any problems with it. So according to the first explanation, Yaakov is making Esav swear to the point that Esav says, "Lemazali b'chayra, what's it worth to me?" According to the second explanation, Yaakov is making him swear that he will never try to back out or renege some way on the sale.
What does the swearing mean?
It's an oath. It's a swear. You swear by Hashem.
But it's coming from Esav.
So doesn't mean Esav didn't take that seriously.
But if it was totally kosher one way, then they needed to trick the father.
First of all, trick the father is not the sale. Trick the father is the blessing. It's not necessarily the same thing.
To bless the...
You're right, but the truth is one of the big questions of understanding in the whole parsha. But there is definitely an approach that says, you know, there was one part of the firstborn right that Yaakov bought. And there was another part of the firstborn right that had to come through a blessing. And it was possible for Esav to get it, even though he sold this firstborn right. Okay, but that's a valid question. That's a valid question.
It seems a little bit that Yaakov got Esav into trouble, and he kind of enticed him. And why
enticed
would
him? Esav was the one who said, give me to eat.
He was hungry.
Esav is the one who said, Hali Tini, pour it down my throat. Esav was the one who said that.
Who was he making the soup for?
He was actually, according to Rashi, he was serving it to his father, who was sitting shiva for his grandfather. Avram had just died. But whatever he was giving it for. But so it wasn't like, you know, Yaakov went over to him and said, you know, Esav said, feed me. Now, again, that became Yaakov's opportunity to do what he felt he needed to do. But really started, Esav was the one who initiated it. Now, so the, continuing with the Ramban, then the Pasuk says, Esav swore, he sold the firstborn right, Yaakov gave Esav to eat, then it says, he got up, he drank, he got up and he left. Vayivas Esav asav b'chayra, and Esav had, an Esav disgraced, he shamed the firstborn right. Now, even though, you know, Esav really explained why he sold the firstborn right. And in some ways, you could argue that Esav gave up, from his point, didn't give such a bad argument. You know, the firstborn right maybe is a good thing, but not when you live Esav's life. Not when you're a hunter. Not when you're constantly in danger. And the chances are you're not going to make it. And you'll never have a chance to benefit from the firstborn right. And therefore, Esav said, you know, it makes a lot of sense for me to sell. Because my chances of ever attaining whatever lies in it is pretty far from sure. And therefore, based on Esav's reasoning that he gave, you wouldn't necessarily see from that that Esav shamed the firstborn right. Now again, the firstborn right, according to the Ramban, is the firstborn right of what happens after the father dies. There's a firstborn right. According to Torah law, the firstborn right is you get a double portion, which is not insignificant, especially in this case. But Esav says, look, there's a good chance I'm not gonna make it. It really doesn't have value to me. So therefore, what exactly is that Vayivez? What exactly is the way of understanding how Esav disgraced the firstborn right when he, at least from himself, he gave a reason to say why it's not really worth it? Now, if you learn that it may not have been worth it to you, but you only sell for a bowl of soup, you know, maybe that's the problem. But the Ramban seems to be bothered by the fact that Esav gave a reason as to why the firstborn right wasn't worth it for him. So where exactly do we see that Esav disgraced it? Esav basically said, it's not worth it for me. And that, says the Ramban, the Pasuk answers that question. Because if you look at Esav's behavior, you know, he was starving to death, Yaakov gave him food, he ate, he drank, back out to the field. Esav's whole life is about what? It's just about, it's just about, feed me, let me get back to what I'm doing. That's what life's about. As the Ramban says, Ki akha sha'akha v'shasa chazar hasada el tzedai. After eating and drinking, he went back to the field. V'zusibas bizoy ha'bachayra. That's the true source for the fact of it, for disgracing the firstborn right. Ki chayvitz b'ksilim. Because the foolish people only want rak sheyechlu v'yishtu. They just want to eat, drink, v'yasu chavtsam v'eatam, and do what they want to do now. V'lo yachushu liyemachar. And they're not concerned about the next day. Meaning the mere fact that Esav's whole attitude is, you know, I'm probably not going to make it. Probably not going to make it. Because his whole life is about doing what he wants to do now. And that's all his focus is. A person who's not a fool, a person who lives life correctly, keeps the future in mind. Keeps the future in mind. You know, you hope there's going to be a future. You hope there's going to be a future, and you want to be prepared for the future. That kind of person wouldn't give up the firstborn right so fast. But Esav, as much as he makes a somewhat rational argument based on the way he makes a living, that, you know, there's a good chance he may not go ahead and make it, but the fact that Esav just, you know, he comes famished, fills himself up, back out to the field. That means all Esav is focused on is about doing what he wants to do now. Never bothered him afterwards. He just wanted to go ahead and do what he wanted to do now. Ramban doesn't mention so much about, you know, bother him. But it's just more like the whole lifestyle, right? You know, you can imagine, you know, you come back exhausted from doing something, right? And you need to eat something and drink something, right? So after being as worn out as Esav was, you'd eat and you would drink, and what would you do? You'd take it easy a little bit. Not Esav. Fill her up. Back out. Because it's all about it's all about having a good time now. It's all about doing what you want to do now. And it's not, and that person who's only focused on the enjoyment of now doesn't look into the future. Yeah, Let me just finish. He doesn't look into the future. And that is essentially what was the source of Esav disgracing the firstborn right. It wasn't just this kind of rationale of, makes a lot of sense what he's saying, right? Good chance he won't have a chance to even experience it. Now that's the thought pattern of a person who's only thinking about the now. The person who's only interested in enjoying himself now. The person who's responsible is a person who's concerned about the future and therefore wouldn't give up what the future could potentially have for him.
So I have several comments and questions. Some of them clarify meaning of words. So they here use the word spurned the birthright.
And
you
call it same word.
Is it?
Same.
I said spurned just means push
it's
it
the
away.
Same idea.
Okay. Second, if it actually means disgrace, so I think he may be right, saying if it's such a bad thing to sell your birthright, why did he even ask his brother to sell it to him?
Because whatever the firstborn right had, Esau was not worthy of it.
Also, he knew that.
Yaakov understood Esau was not worthy of it. There's no question that Yaakov was doing this because something that Esau was not worthy of having, he shouldn't have.
And finally, so I wonder whether you're fair enough to Esau, because you said that he ran off having a good time, but we also know that he was feeding his father, so maybe he felt that he needs to go right back to kill one more animal.
Yeah.
He didn't have to be out there a whole day. He wasn't a whole day making food for his father.
Okay.
He brought food for his father. That wasn't his whole, he didn't have to be a hunter to do that. You know, the hunter, that's what he wanted to do with himself. Yeah, and he used it also, and he also used it to give to his father. Okay. Alright. Now the Ramban launches into discussing an idea that the Ibn Ezra proposes to try to understand this entire story with Esav. The Ibn Ezra is bothered. Why did Esav sell his firstborn right? You know, there's a lot in store there. There's an awful lot in store there. What made him give it up? Says the Ibn Ezra, actually, we have to say that Yitzchak was broke. At this point of time, Yitzchak was broke. That's the only reason why we could fathom that Esav would sell his firstborn right, because firstborn right, what's that going to do for me? What's that going to do for me? There's nothing there. There's nothing there. Says the Ibn Ezra, you know, that many people don't like this explanation, because what do you mean? Yitzchak was poor. Avram was a wealthy man. You don't think Avram left him a lot of money? Says the Ibn Ezra back to them, you've never seen people lose money? You've never seen a son waste his father's, I'm not saying that on Yitzchak. Basically he says, you've never seen a rich man lose his money?
Children
upside later on. Yeah, but he sent them away. He didn't give them the main estate.
There was no casinos, I assume.
But Ibn Ezra says, you never seen anybody lose their money? Yeah. That's what he says. And what really happened was also that, you know, by the time Yitzchak got older, he lost his money. Proof being, meaning at this point of time, where Yitzchak is, you know, is older, it says Yitzchak loves Esav because Esav feeds him game. Why does Yitzchak get so excited about the food that Esav is feeding him? He's a rich man. He's a rich man, he's got plenty of food. Like, what's the big deal about the hunted food? That's number one. Okay, number two, basically, why would he sell his firstborn right for a bowl of soup? Okay. Later on, by the blessings, Yitzchak says to Esav, bring me food and I'll bless you. He needs Esav to bring him food? He's a rich man, he's got plenty of food. What does he need Esav to bring him food for? Okay. We also know that when Yaakov disguised himself as Esav, so it says that Rivka dressed him in Esav's begadim achamudos, in his special clothing. And Yaakov didn't have special clothing? Father's a rich man. Yaakov doesn't have special clothing? He needs like Esau's special clothing? That's what Ibn Ezra asks. Okay. Now, another point.
But that could mean the ones that he used to make part of the tricking him.
Could be. But this is what I'm just telling you. This is just what Ibn Ezra says. Okay. Now, another thing. When Rivka sends Yaakov off to go find a wife, okay? So basically, we know that when Yaakov has the dream by the ladder, he says, if Hashem will provide me with food and clothing and my needs, what does he need? What's his needs? His parents are rich people. His mother couldn't send him off with everything that he needs? That he had to go ahead and say, if Hashem will give me bread? What do you mean? Well, you don't have bread? Why don't you have bread? Why did she loved him? She should have sent him with everything that he needed. Now, we know that later on in this parsha, right? Meaning we know that after the parsha talks about the sale of the firstborn, right? there's a famine, and Yitzchak goes down to the land of the Plishtim, because he's a very wealthy man. So much so that the king of the Plishtim, Avimelech, sends him away. You're too rich for us. You have to leave. Okay? So you say, what do you mean? So Yitzchak's a rich man, seemingly, right? Nah, he lost it. He was a rich man. When he went to the Plishtim, he was a rich man. But then he lost it. Before he went, by the time the story is, when he's giving the blessings to Esav and Yaakov, when he wants to give the blessings to Esav, and he's definitely older then, by then, he's broke again. But then he's broke.
Because Yaakov didn't have
okay.
Laban.
Yaakov made his money by Laban. Now, okay. So that's basically, and then he brings down the Ben Ezra that a lot of people say, what do you mean? Yitzchak, who's from the Oves at Tzadik, he should have been rich. Why would Hashem make him poor? Right? Number one, he should be rich because, you know, people who are righteous are usually blessed with that. And then number two, why would Hashem make him poor? Says the Ben Ezra, and why did Hashem make him blind? Hashem made him blind too. We don't know why he did it. But that's the way it was. That's what Ibn Ezra basically says. So this is the Ibn Ezra's approach. The Ibn Ezra's approach is that Yitzchak basically lost his father's money, and Yitzchak lost his own money. This is why Esav was willing to sell his firstborn, right? This is how we understand why Yitzchak was so into Esav's food. Says the Ramban, very not happy with the Ibn Ezra's approach. He says, first of all, okay, if you think about it, which is something that the Ibn Ezra doesn't seem to touch on, is that, okay, if you want to work, let's work in the sequence of it, let's work through the timeline of the Parsha, all right, to understand the current Ibn Ezra, what's going on. In last week's Parsha, Abraham dies. Abraham dies, basically, the same time that this story with Yaakov and Esav takes place. Rashi brings it down from the Medrash. But basically, if you calculate Avram's age by the time he died and how old Yitzchak was, based on how old Yitzchak is when Avram dies at 175, right? That means Avram and Avram was 100 years old when he gave birth, when he had Yitzchak. That means by the time Avram dies, how old is Yitzchak? 75. Which makes sense, right? Because he was 60 when he had these kids. So that means they're 15 years old when Avraham dies. 15 years old, okay? This story of Yaakov and getting the firstborn right from Esav is clearly before Esav's married. No one's married yet, right? They're not married yet. So this time period of the sale of the firstborn right and Avram's death can't be that far apart from each other. That has to mean that Avraham died. The Ben Ezra didn't say Avram died a poor man. Avram died a rich man. But Yitzchak lost all that money that Avram left him. That's a very short period of time. It's not a lot of time. There's a good argument to say it's not a lot of time to lose all that money. It's not 15 years. On the contrary, maybe even less than 15 years. Now, maybe Ibn Ezra can say, maybe it wasn't exactly at the same time. But again, it's before anybody's married, and we know, you know, it says, Vayigal and Arim, and Esav is Yedei Shayid, you know. All this is not happening too much before Avram dies. Mm-hmm. That has to mean that Avram dies, leaves all the money to Yitzchak, Yitzchak loses all the money, goes to the land of Plishtim, makes back money, and then loses it again by the time he wants to bless Esav. Ramban's just not too comfortable with that. That's number one. Number two, we know that after Avraham dies, it says, Vayivarech Elokim es Yitzchak b'nai. Hashem blessed Yitzchak. If Hashem blesses you, blessing means that you're blessed with materially also. You're blessed materially, okay? And if so, so the blessing came after Avraham died. Right? That's why Yitzchak lost all the money. And he says, and even to say later that Yitzchak lost all the money. I mean, the Ramban says, yes, it's true that there are tzaddikim that, you know, aren't rich. But they didn't get Hashem's blessing. like Yitzchak did. If Hashem blesses you, it says Hashem blesses you, then Hashem's blessing doesn't fall off. So very difficult to say that Yitzchak went ahead and lost his money. Rather, says the Ramban, the Avos were like kings. They were like kings. They were rich and powerful and recognized like kings. That's why we find, and people wanted to make covenants with them. They wanted to make treaties with them. Yeah, Yitzchak, Avimelech threw out Yitzchak, but eventually he made a treaty with him. And Avimelech made a treaty with Avram, because they were very important people. They were like kings. And says the, so Yitzchak was like a king, and there is no reason to say that he wasn't wealthy. Therefore, he says that the reason why Esav sold his firstborn right, it's like we said before, because it didn't mean anything to him. It should have meant something to him, but it didn't mean anything to him. And that's because, again, of the corruption, kind of corrupt person he was, that all Esav was focused on was the present enjoyment instead of being a responsible person and keeping the future in mind. Then he says that perhaps, that, and this seems to be a different approach than before, that, you know, we were saying before that why would Esav give up his firstborn right, which is a double portion of a lot of money? So says the Ramban, maybe they didn't practice the double portion thing yet. Maybe that idea of the Torah that the firstborn gets double portion, they didn't practice that yet. So what's the advantage of being a firstborn? So the answer is it's a status symbol. It's a status symbol. And when, you know, the father dies, he was the patriarch, he was the head of the clan, and now you become head of the clan. And maybe you get a little bit more money. But it could be well that maybe he says that Esav again was ready to give it up because really didn't make a lot of a difference. Didn't make a lot of difference. But again, that would be a different approach of why Esav was ready to give it up so fast. Okay, now, then he says, why was Yitzchak so into Esav feeding him game? He's a rich man, he's got plenty of food. Says the Ramban, Kein yasu asam rav amalochem. You know what? Rich people, right, they like game. Fresh hunted meat, roasted over a fire, you know, ribs. That's considered a delicacy for the nobleman. And on the contrary, he says, that on the contrary, by all these kinds of rich and powerful people, when people want to give them gifts, you know what they give them? They give them game. Fresh game they give them. That's a delicacy. And that's exactly what Esav was trying to do to his father. His father had plenty of money, plenty of food, but game, that's the good stuff. And that's what he was trying to do to get his to basically get his father on his side. Now, what about the fact that later on, Yitzchak says, before he wants to bless Esav, he says, bring me food to eat. What's that about? Again, he got plenty of food. What does he need to get food for? Says the Ramban, it's not about paying him for doing it. You know, I'm not paying you. The bracha is not the payment for the food. And it's not to entice you, like to bribe you to go ahead and get the food. But rather, it's, well, I'll just read you the words. Yitzchak wanted to benefit from Esav, because he wanted to forge a very close connection that comes between people when somebody benefits you. And therefore, you'll bless the person with a full heart. When you do me a favor, it creates a connection. I feel an appreciation to you for it. And therefore, a bracha that comes out of that feeling is a full-hearted bracha. And the bracha, and the feeling you have in a bracha makes a difference of what goes into the bracha and what kind of bracha the person receives. So Yitzchak asking for food is because Esav, he wants to give Esav the bracha. Esav will give him the food. Yitzchak will feel very connected and want to pay him back. And therefore the bracha will be done with the fullest of heart. That's why he asked for it. It was about making sure that he gave the bracha with the greatest desire and willingness and feeling involved. Or he says the Ramban interestingly, that we find that the prophet Elisha, there's a pasuk that says, Kachuli Menagin, he asked for someone to play music, and as the musician played, he had prophecy. The Ruach Hashem, the Spirit of Hashem, came upon him. Basically, to experience Nevuah, there was clearly the practice of Nevi'im to put themselves in a state of joy. And in that state of joy, they were able to elevate themselves to receive prophecy. So Yitzchak wanted to do that also. In order for the Ruach HaKodesh, says the Ramban, for the spirit of prophecy, or the special spirit of Hashem, to rest on Yitzchak when he made the bracha, he wanted to do something that would bring him joy, physical joy, just like the music. He wanted the food to make him feel happy, to feel joyful, and then he could take that joy and elevate himself, and then experience prophecy. So the Ramban is trying to say we've got a number of reasons as to why Yitzchak would ask for food before he blessed Esav. Not because he had nothing to eat and he was broke, but because of the fact that this was the means by which he knew he could bless him in the best way possible. Why didn't they give Yaakov money when he ran away? Why didn't they give him anything to support himself? The answer is because Rivka understood that if all of a sudden Yaakov leaves, right, with, you know, camels and donkeys and money, Esav is not going to be happy. Esav is already angry at Yaakov. Now he's going off to find a wife and all this stuff. That was going to anger Esav. They were afraid they would anger Esav even more and kill him on the spot. So basically, they wanted Yaakov to pick himself and leave without any big fanfare, without making Esav angry, without drawing too much attention to himself. And therefore, yeah, he left broke. All because he wanted to leave withdrawing the least attention from Esav. Or, says the Ramban, Rashi brings out a Parshas Vayetze, Yaakov had money, but he was robbed. Because Esav sent Eliphaz to kill him. So Yaakov thinks, Eliphaz, just take my money. So, yeah, according to that Medrash, Yitzchak had money. He had money. They took it away from him. He was robbed. Regarding the special clothing, the Ramban says, like you said, right, that sure, Yaakov had special clothing, but they wanted him to wear Esav's clothing so that they should think he's Esav. Because he says, Esav's special clothing, I'm not sure exactly, yeah, he bases this, he said, Esav used to basically, you know, because he was in the field, he was able to get these different spices and different herbs, which he would cook up put the good scent into his clothing. But again, it was all clothing because the smell of his clothing, the good smell of his clothing, the perfume of his clothing was because of all the stuff that he got in the field because he lived in the field. So Yaakov's special clothing was unique than Yaakov's clothing. And because Yitzchak was blind, and we know that he smelled the clothing, he was trying to identify Esav, Yaakov wore Esav's special clothing so not to be identified as himself, but disguised himself as Esav. And then the final thing that he talks about, which is the fact that the Ibn Ezra was very upset with the people who asked, like, why would Hashem make Yitzchak poor? And the Ibn Ezra says, well, why did he make him blind? Hashem has his reasons. Says the Ramban, I can give you a reason. I can give you a very good reason why Hashem made him blind. A very basic reason. How else were the blessings going to go land up by Yaakov? That was necessary to do. For whatever reason it was necessary to do it that way. And therefore when the Pasuk says Yitzchak became old and became blind, he became blind so that the rest of the story can take place. Or, says the Ramban, the blindness wasn't something special. Why did Hashem make him blind? And the Ibn Ezra says, see, these are the secrets of Hashem. He got old. When people get old, Avram wasn't, but Yaakov was. No. Right? There are a lot of shows a lot of psukim where, you know, old age makes a person not be able to see. So truly, it contributed to the situation. But you want to know he was blind? Because he got very old. And that's what became blind. So this is the Ramban's, you know, and this all revolves around trying to understand, you know, why did Esav give up the firstborn right? Why was he stupid enough to give it up? So the Ramban at the end says either he gave it up because of the corrupt kind of person that he was, the materialistic, self-indulgent person that he was. But Ezra wants to say he gave it up because there was nothing to look forward to. Or the Ramban says that, you know, again, if there was no practice of double portion, perhaps Esav just felt there's not really much there to give up. It's not, you know, it wasn't such a big deal. The status wasn't such a big deal to him. But again, this all revolved around that and touched on a number of, you know, interesting points of understanding what's going on in different points in this whole episode with Yitzchak, Esav, and Yaakov.